Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hour 3 rolling along this morning. We've been talking about Draymond Green and his stomp on Domantas Sabonis. And also,
he was just putting his foot down, Tony.
Just putting his foot down, NBA.
What, are you expecting to hop on one foot for the rest of the game?
That's right, exactly. We also we had a bit in Good, the Bad, and the Dumb on the bull sharks in Australia, and you've been looking up deadliest animals in Australia.
Yeah, I went down the wormhole.
You're down a rabbit hole? Rabbit hole, whatever they're called. Wow.
And it's just, yeah, and like I was saying too, it's like I'm not, you know, they have like, you know, the salt crocodiles and the great white sharks. Of course they're deadly. They have these gigantic snakes that are terrible. I'm not afraid of those because I can see that coming.
Right.
Or you can see that. It's the small little ones that, like I was telling you about this little spider, this funnel spider, that it's only like 1 to 5 centimeters big. That's small.
Yeah.
And one of the places it likes to hide in dark, cool places, and one of the places it likes to be in is your shoes.
So you're just like, hey, Mom, I'll be right there. I can just put my shoes on. Ow!
Bite.
Dead. God, that's scary. I had to look this up. There's a plant in Australia. Remember I told you about this plant? So I saw this plant years ago, and it never escaped my brain. It was one of those things that permanently entered my brain. And it's just a simple plant. It's got simple leaves on it. It doesn't look nefarious or anything terrible or anything like that. But it's one of the most poisonous plants in Australia. So if you just touch it, here's basically the toxicity of this plant. After contact with the plant, the victim will feel an immediate severe burning and stinging at the site of contact. Okay, that's fine, right?
Fantastic.
Which then intensifies further over the next 20 to 30 minutes and will last from hours to several days before subsiding. During this time, the victim may get little sleep because of the intensity of the pain. That's basically all you had to do is touch this.
That sounds fantastic.
Touch it. And for the next couple of days, you won't sleep a wink because your body will be in immense physical pain. Immense physical pain. That's it. Touch the leaf and that's it. That's it. You're done. You're finished. And here's the thing. I hate to say this because I don't really hate to say this, but somebody had to find that out for us.
Yes. Is that the Gimpy Gimpy?
That's the Gimpy Gimpy. That's right.
Also known as the suicide plant.
That's right.
I had to look it up myself just to see what it looks like to make sure I don't ever go by there.
Can you imagine if somebody like ate it? Like just went, I wonder if this plant's edible. Joe, would you like to give this a try? And he just convulses and dies. Like, well, I guess we won't be eating that. Thanks, Joe, for letting us know that. I mean, goodness, it's
I love the name, Gimpy Gimpy. I don't even know if that's the right way, but that's how I'm going to say it. It
says here, anecdotes of encounters with the Gimpy Gimpy are numerous. Many can be dismissed as yarn, such as one involving using leaves as toilet paper, blah, blah, blah.
Woo!
But, I know. Can you imagine that?
Wow.
Nevertheless, some have been documented, such as horses having to be rested after being stung or even becoming violent and having to be shot.
Listen, I've been on the backside of a, you know, wing tasting competition or, you know, hot sauce tasting competition, and that hurt.
Yes.
That hurt. I can't imagine using this like, oh, look at nature's toilet paper. Here we go.
Just days.
Wipe, wipe, wipe.
There's no antidote. It's not like they can inject you with something. You got to just tough it out. Oh, see? In Australia.
Yeah.
And Australia seems so awesome. Like, I'd love to see
really
a kangaroo
does.
And a koala bear.
I remember once.
I want to have a Vegemite sandwich.
When I was in high school, there was an Australian track team that came to visit. There's like touring Southern California places to go, I guess. I don't know. And we were talking to them because we competed against them. And I was fascinated by them. But I'll never forget this. One of the girls that I was talking to said koala bears, they look at koala bears like we look at raccoons.
Really?
Like raccoons are cool looking. They're amazing. But they get into everything. And that's kind of what they said koala bears do is like, you know, they're cute, they're cuddly, but they get into everything at night.
Yeah, so you're probably like, I'm more annoyed with them. I don't know. We don't look at raccoons as cute and cuddly.
Well,
we look at them as like,
go
into that trash.
They're bandits.
I hate to admit this. When I first moved to Tennessee, there was a possum in my garage. I had no idea what it was. I'd never seen a possum before. I had to ask my neighbor. So what is that? It's possum. I go, is that, that's what a possum is?
One of the,
I was like, well, I always kind of thought a possum was this.
One animal that I almost find elusive in Houston to or in Texas to look at is an armadillo.
Armadillo, yeah.
Alive. I've seen so many dead ones on the side of the road that I just think that that's all they're for. They're just nature's speed bump.
Right, right. I hit a porcupine once when I was a kid in New Hampshire.
That would be cool.
That was. Well, I just accidentally hit a porcupine.
Shoots at a... Did the needles pop the tire? Dude, those needles don't pop tires, right?
No. They...
Come on.
Yeah. Now, they have the thing, but they didn't. He didn't recognize... I don't even know if I killed it. I just remember bumping.
See, I mean, we got cool animals. And I wonder if, like, Australia looks at us like, oh, North America just would be awesome with all those wildlife.
Exactly. Oh, no. Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, America, you got all those great animals.
And look at the mountains and the streams and Monument Valleys. That would be fantastic to watch. But you know what? 19 hours, couldn't do it.
Couldn't do it. Can't go to L.A. or Dallas or Seattle or Colorado. Can't do it. Can't leave here. Take too long. Sit here with my crocodile. Golly. The crocodiles are scary as hell.
Well, but again, you'll see it coming.
That's true.
I mean,
that's true. Unless you're walking along the river and they decide to jump up and decide to snag you while you're walking along a river.
Or if you went to go fill up your canteen.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, look at this beautiful river. Just get some water. Chomp. Here comes the crocodiles. No, man, those things. What about kangaroos? They look cute, but they look like they'll kick your butt.
You know what? I'm trying to remember what zoo I went to. There was an area where you can walk around amongst kangaroos, and I thought that was really bizarre. Might have been in Phoenix.
You could just walk around kangaroos?
Yeah, it was like you went through a gate, and it was like a little area, and the kangaroos were just all around. And they were just – it was almost like walking around goats. You weren't allowed to touch them, though, and feed them.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, don't they get aggressive?
But, yeah. I've seen that happen. But, I don't know.
Just dissecting wildlife in Australia because of how dangerous it is.
Well, I mean, because, what we're led to believe is that that's where all the manly men come from.
That's right. Exactly. Right. Crocodile Dundee.
Exactly.
Remember how he just could take bat poo and just make it into something awesome that would help get the bad guys away. I don't know. He was all over the place. He could do all sorts of cool things. Crocodile Dundee.
I love Crocodile Dundee, too.
Was that the one where he was in New York? Or is that the one?
The Crocodile Dundee 2 was when he the Colombians.
Oh yeah,
followed
yeah.
him to
Australia.
To Australia, and he was like, "Oh, I got to see them. Like, I can't protect him here in the city, or I can't protect her here in the city. I need to be where I can."
He needed to be in the outback.
Yeah,
yeah.
That just looked like so much fun.
Yeah, I know. Jeez. On Twitter, Phillip saying, it's insane to think about, but how long is it going to be for potential thought of a $75 to $100 million quarterback starts to become a reality? We're at 50, possibly 55 now. That's a good point.
Yeah.
We are at 50, and I can think that Joe Burrow gets 55 or Justin Herbert gets – so I can see that. Yeah, within a decade.
See, I don't think Justin Herbert – if he's to get a contract this season, if I'm him, I would hold off. Just play on your current deal.
Play a little, take it a little bit longer.
Yeah, because you haven't really accomplished anything. You haven't accomplished what Joe Burrow and Jalen Hurts have.
Doesn't matter.
I mean, in a way, it
doesn't matter.
I mean, I'm saying to get the big money.
It doesn't. No, because it's.
I think he needs to show. I think he needs to have a little.
Okay, hold on.
A little something in the treasure chest.
There is, but hold on. There is so. You're a quarterback in a league that has no quarterbacks.
Right. No, I get what you're saying.
So there is a point in every contract where that contract comes to an end. Okay? So Justin Herbert's contract, if you do nothing, if you make no moves on it, eventually reaches a point where he goes, hey, look at me. I'm now not under any obligation to anybody. I am a free agent. And that's why you pay a lot of money, because you trap them into your deal. You can get a franchise tag and all that stuff, but eventually, if you do nothing, there'll be a point where you become available,
right?
And you try to eat them up. It doesn't matter if you won a Super Bowl or didn't win a Super Bowl or what. It doesn't matter what your resume is. They don't pay you for what you did. They pay you for what you're going to do. They lock you in to the deal so that because if they don't, one day you could leave when you go through all of the processes that the league has in place. So, no, I don't think he has to wait to win a Super Bowl to get or go to a Super Bowl to get Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts money.
I think his
agent's going to go, you know what the market is in 2023? The market is $52 million a year.
I think if he waits one more season, plays out this season before signing an extension or whatnot, that he could eclipse the $50 million range.
Yeah.
I don't think he's there quite yet.
Oh, no. I think if he waits, he can get that. But the Chargers are going to be very interested in locking him up.
Oh, they were. I mean, probably trying to do it now.
And remember, this money is coming because of an increase in the percentages that are going to the teams in their salary cap. Right? So they're playing within the guidelines of all the new money that comes to them available in the cap. They're not creating a Jalen Hurts $51 million deal on old Patrick Mahomes cap money, right? That's why guys renegotiate, because there's ability to make a little bit more as the salary cap money increases. But I think that Burrow is going to get 55.
Yeah,
easily.
Easily.
He's been
2 straight AFC championships?
Yeah. To go back to Phillip's point, but again, I see where you're going. I just think that if you show the ability to be an elite quarterback in this league, I'm one of 15 people that can do this.
And what I'm saying on his end, another great season, maybe even a playoff win, you're in the $50 million per year range. Yeah,
absolutely, without question.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we've got... we're going to talk some NHL hockey coming up with Dennis Bernstein is going to be coming up, and he is really passionate about hockey. That's going to come up in a half an hour. He's with the fourth period senior writer. The NHL playoffs got started yesterday. The Boston Bruins, 65 wins, 135 points. They're the favorites, but there are some really good teams in the postseason.
He might be a little tired today too, because he was there for Edmonton, LA.
A little late night.
Late night goal to push it to overtime.
Yeah. Saw Barry Melrose on my TV this morning, too. He's another one. Late night, getting that studio, especially in Bristol. You got to be up till like whatever. Then you got to get in.
It's got to be so hard to cover hockey. Ugh, yeah. I mean,
exactly. You run into these games every postseason where they go 2-3 overtimes.
Yeah, all the time.
There's always a game that does that.
It's always one.
Oh, we'll sleep when we're dead. It's the fourth period here in Winnipeg. Right? It's like, oh, here we go. But is anyone going to beat Boston? Is anybody in the West? Can Colorado repeat? How good are Seattle and Vegas and Minnesota? We'll get all that with Dennis Bernstein.
Any Canadian teams want to step up and win this thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's three, right?
There are three. There's Toronto, Winnipeg, and Edmonton. And Edmonton's very, very good.
Except for last night, they lost.
Yeah, but they lost last night. But they're very, very good. They had 50 wins this season, so they were decent. And of course, they got Connor McDavid. So everybody loves Connor McDavid. So we'll get some hockey. I'm not the biggest hockey fan in the world, but I do respect the sport immensely, especially this time of year. I do agree. I want to know why people say that the Stanley Cup is the hardest trophy to win, when the NBA Larry O'Brien Trophy, you have to do the exact same thing. They used to say it because every series would be 7 games, and you had to get 16 wins in order to win the Stanley Cup. So they said, well, the NBA, you don't have to, because the NBA's first round used to be 5 games. But when the NBA went to 7 games, why do they still hold on to the idea that the Stanley Cup's the hardest trophy to win? The NBA, you have to win 16 games too. Is that not more difficult? Is that just as difficult?
Is
the NCAA tournament the hardest thing to win?
Yeah, but doesn't it feel, you're absolutely right. that it almost feels like winning the Stanley Cup is impossible.
Right.
Versus, you know, winning the Larry O'Brien Trophy.
I hate to say this, but I think the NCAA tournament is the hardest because the one and done nature of it. What do we always talk about with seven game series? Like, they're long enough to make adjustments. They're long enough to figure it out. If losing a seven game series is again, it's death by a thousand paper cuts, right? It's like a little thing here, a little thing here, a little thing here. All right, we lost game one. All right, we came back and won game two. Oh, we lost game three. Oh, maybe we lost game four. Oh, our back's against the wall in game five, but we won it. Now we got our backs against the wall against game six. Oh, yeah, but that got to us. But you got the long, drawn-out feeling. You can walk into an arena, an arena in the NCAA tournament, and be out 2 hours later. Like, you could be the favorites, and you could be out 2 hours later. So, and that's it. You're done. Bye-bye. Pack up. See ya. Get out. Get out of the way. We got other teams to watch for. You're no longer a story here. See ya. So, but I do, the amount of physical exertion that can happen in a playoff series where you just go all the time. So Dennis,
and maybe that's it. Maybe it's the nature of overtime.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, late games, because I mean, but it's the same thing with NBA. NBA is constant action, except, you know, you can take a timeout,
exactly.
You can slow it down, you can pause, but in hockey, it feels like, especially if it's later in the game and the score is close, you're not really like staying on the outside of the, you know, the arch.
This goes back to the most important person in sports argument, because we always go, yeah, well, it's quarterback. Like, the most important play position in sports is quarterback, but a hot goaltender can win you the Stanley Cup.
Yep.
If you've got a hot goaltender, you can actually win the cup because of that individual. Like,
good,
the Bruins are great. But what if the Bruins run into a series where the guy who they're playing against, the goalie they're playing against, is a brick wall, and he just finds the zone, and he's like, I block, everything's coming my way.
Could win you a 1980 gold medal, too.
That's right. That's very, very true.
But no, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's, you know, you hope that, you know, the backup does get a chance at some point down the road, but you probably won't, because if you got a hot goalie, you're leaving him in.
Yeah.
And that hot goalie is going to play some serious minutes. He's not getting a rest at all.
So we got Dennis Bernstein coming up at the bottom of the hour. So I just put this out on Twitter. I got a little personal gripe with the sport I care about, Formula One. Ferrari just got told their appeal of a 5-second penalty was denied. You know why?
What does
that
mean?
All right, let me tell you why I'm mad. I'm mad now. I'm gonna forgive me for this. I'm mad. So the Australian Grand Prix was a couple of weeks ago. I root for Ferrari.
Of course,
so
it's Australia.
It's in Australia. So they had a restart late in the race, right? And Carlos Sainz, who is Ferrari driver, went into the back end of Fernando Alonso's car on a restart. So they had all the cars line up back on the grid. They had an accident. They brought him back into the pits. They said, we're going to just restart the race when we get this cleared up. So they brought him back on the grid. They went into the first corner. And they went into the first corner. It was all chaotic. And Carlos Sainz ran into the back end of Fernando Alonso, which would incur a 5-second penalty. But this is why I'm mad. It was all jumbled. It was all such a mess that you can almost go, it was chaotic. So what they did was they had to clean that all up, and they brought the cars back, and they said, here's the deal. We are going to run a safety car lap, and that's the final lap of the race, and how you finish on the safety car lap with no passing, we're just going to make the race complete. It's kind of a thing they have to do. It's not fun for the fans because you don't actually see racing, but they go around in order and they cross the line. But after the race, so Carlos Sainz finishes fourth, and after the race they tell him, yeah, and for banging in Fernando Alonso, you get a 5-second penalty. Now, here's why this is a big deal. Because if they were running a race at the end, if they were just had cars all over the track, your 5-second penalty, you just add 5 seconds to your finishing time, and that may bump you down to, let's say you go from fourth to fifth, because you might be 4.5 seconds ahead of the fifth place guy, 5 seconds puts you behind him. You might keep your fourth place position because you might be 5.2 seconds ahead of the guy behind you. But when all the cars are bunched together and they're all crossing the finish line at pretty much the same exact time, you go from fourth to dead last. So they appealed that decision saying, hey, wait a minute. Even though there was some bumping, the penalty is way too harsh. All the drivers said the penalty was way too harsh. They said, look, they're all crossing the line within a quarter of a second of each other. So they're all running under these slow speeds. It drops them all the way back to outside the points. And they said, nah, too bad, denied. And now it's now they got no points for that race. So it's a tough penalty. It was really, really bad. So I posted the news, but I was very frustrated. It's very frustrating because I was wondering where that was going to go when the appeal happened. It took a while, but they finally denied it. So there's my personal rant. Has nothing to do with anything. I still like the deal for Jalen Hurts. I still like the game last night.
Well, it was just my own
personal rant.
Ferrari didn't interrupt your...
No, but it stinks to root for... Jalen Hurts. I've been a Ferrari fan forever, and I know. Here's the thing. If you're a Formula One fan, rooting for Ferrari in the days of like Michael Schumacher was easy. That's why, I root for them because they're an Italian team. And when Michael Schumacher was winning Formula One championships, it was easy, and they were winning championships with Kimi and all that. But now they've run on hard times. And now everybody I know that gets into the sport roots for Red Bull.
Yeah, but that's what's supposed to happen because, I mean, it's like, you know, that's how I describe my fandom for Manchester United.
Everyone looks at
that and goes, oh, you became a fan of Manchester United. That's like being a fan of the Yankees when the Yankees are really good.
Sure, exactly.
And it was like, yeah, you're absolutely right. I didn't know anything else. And that's for you. It's like, yeah, you became a fan when when Ferrari was hot.
I was like, what am I supposed to know? I started covering Formula One in the 90s, and so I kind of was into it for a bit. Then I just jumped on Ferrari, and then Michael Schumacher jumped on Ferrari, and I was good with that. But now they're tough. It's tough to watch them not be competitive. So everything that they do drives me nuts.
So, by the way, my 6-year-old wanted to watch Cars, and that's still one of my favorite scenes.
Oh, with Michael Schumacher, Ferrari?
Yeah, when he shows up.
Yeah, exactly.
Unreal! Michael Schumacher!
Ferrari. Exactly.
And then he passes out.
He passes out, yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, nevertheless, that's just my that's my personal rant this morning before we get into the hockey talk with Dennis Bernstein coming up. Man, I gotta catch this. The problem is there's too many things to watch. And I like the NBA more, but I really do want to catch the wave of the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs.
It'll happen. It'll happen. I mean, it's slow rolling because, I mean, let's face it. I mean, both these postseasons are like 2-3 months long.
I know.
That's what's amazing to me as well because, like, you know, NFL postseason is a month and a half.
When we went on vacation last year in June on the cruise, we would every night I was watching either the Avalanche and the Lightning. I had the NBA playoffs, NBA finals. There was like this feeling of there was like some really good stuff going on at this time of year. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's right now there's a lot of teams.
There's too many.
32 teams between the two sports that are participating in the postseason. So there's 16 games and series to dissect. It's a lot.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Joining us, Dennis Bernstein, set to join us from the fourth period. Covers the NHL and the NHL playoffs underway last night. 4 games from last night, including Boston beating Florida, and then 2 overtime games. Minnesota with a double overtime win against Dallas, and then the game Dennis was at last night, L.A. beating Edmonton 4-3. He joins us on a Progressive guest line. Looking for a career path with flexibility and great pay and benefits, go to progressive.com/careers. Dennis Bernstein joining us here on Sports Map Radio. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing great. Oh, this sport, it's just, this is the first night of playoffs last night. It's just, it's an amazing sport, a great dramatic game in Edmonton last night, but what can you say about this sport?
We were just talking about the overtime atmosphere in the playoffs in this sport. There's nothing else like it in any other sport. That you can't leave, you can't move, you can't breathe. It's incredible.
Yeah, and in Edmonton, you know, you're up 3-1, Tony, and the fans are ready to celebrate after the game, and then it gets as quiet as a library, and then there's drama and there's intensity and there's everything you can imagine in overtime. It's just, this sport just, it raises the level of competition once we get to game 83, and you saw it last night in a couple of games, especially the one here in Edmonton.
All right, let's go over some of the teams, and let's start with the top. Let's start with the Bruins. 65 wins, 135 points, both NHL records. They've got two good goaltenders in Jeremy Swayman and Linus Ullmark. But what else? What are the other pieces to this puzzle that has completed this Bruins season?
Tony, when you could put Tyler Bertuzzi and Taylor Hall on your third line and Dmitry Orlov, who's probably a first-pair defenseman on a lot of teams, on your third pair, you're a deep damn team. Like, so that's why they should be the prohibitive favorite, Tony. They should be. They took care of business last night. They didn't give up a lot. This team is ready. They're well coached by Jim Montgomery. They have all the facets of a championship team. But, Tony, you know, here's the thing. President Trophy winners, the teams that get the most points in the league, haven't won in 10 years, haven't won the Cup. Like, the last thing to do with the Blackhawks in 2013. It's not going to be. And that was a solid win for the Bruins. It wasn't a dominating win. It wasn't convincing win. It's, even if the Bruins do wind up winning, it's not going to be easy. That's why this trophy is so great, the Stanley Cup, because it's always earned. You never hear, oh, they got an easy draw to go to the Cup final. It's going to be contentious for the Bruins. Maybe not in this run against Florida, but this is a deep, talented team that I suspect, and I've picked them to come out of the East, which is not a surprise to anyone.
All right, give me a lowdown on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Is this finally a season where those pieces that we've been wondering are in place? Are they finally in place, or is this still yet another team that may not find its way to the promised land?
Tony D, I've been asked that question about 10 times in the last, 3 days. I think so. They're a really good team. The only problem with the Leafs in this series is there's a mismatch in net. Like, Andrei Vasilevsky is superior to Samsonov, but they have Ron O'Reilly now, who's back from injury. They're deep. They're very, very talented. I think this is here because, not because of them so much, but Tampa's played a lot of hockey over the last 4 years. And you saw it down the stretch. They were a tired team. I think they were 5-5 down the stretch in the last 10 games. And people were saying, well, you know, they're laying in the weeds. I don't think so. And plus the one move that they had to make because of salary cap issues, they're going to miss Ryan McDonagh at some point during the playoffs. So he had to be traded to Nashville to fit other guys on the cap. I think that's the difference with respect to this team going back to a Cup final for a fourth consecutive season. So, yeah, I do think that the Leafs can get past the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round, but waiting for them in the second round will be the Bruins, and it will be an entirely different animal they have to tackle.
Give me the rundown on the Metropolitan Division. Carolina's been good for a couple of years. The Rangers are there. The Devils are there. Who do you like out of that division? Who do you like that has a team that's well built to challenge Boston in the East?
I think any of the three teams would come out. I actually picked the Islanders to beat the Hurricanes because I didn't think they had enough offense. But they won in classic Carolina Hurricane fashion last night, you know, a 2-1 win. The Ranger Devil series, now I'm old enough to remember 1994 when it went 7 games and went double overtime. I could see that happening in this round, Tony. There's just not a lot to separate between the Rangers and the Devils. Now, when you compare the two teams, the Rangers have all the experience, they have the veteran star power, and the Devils have speed and youth. So it's going to be a classic matchup. I think this is going to go the distance. I think the casual fan that wants to tune into one series, because of the proximity of the two teams, that series stands to be a great, great series. I think it's going to go deep. I do think it's going to go 7. So, but any of the three can come out, and they'll be anybody comes out of the Metro, Tony, it's going to be a significant challenge for the Bruins, assuming the Bruins get out of the Atlantic. Yeah. It's going to be a very, very fun series between the Devils and the Rangers.
All right, let's get to the Colorado Avalanche. They've played the season without Gabriel Landeskog, but they've had injuries throughout the season. They seem to be pretty healthy now. Are the Avalanche the favorites in a very tough Western Conference?
It depends on one guy. And they've had an interesting season, right? You mentioned Landeskog's been out. Rantanen's been fantastic. Mikko Rantanen, he's their MVP, scored 50 goals. Nathan MacKinnon, had he played all the games, would have been the second-leading scorer in the league, but he was injured for about 10 or 12 games. But the one guy that has to play, Tony, for Colorado is Cale Makar.
Yep.
I watched his team play a couple times down the stretch. They are a different, more dynamic, more dangerous team with Cale Makar. If Cale's in, then, yeah, I'd pick him to go back to the Cup final and try to defend their championship. But without Cale Makar, if he's not healthy, then no, they will not come out because they are the really, really good teams. Don't sell Vegas short. They're a mentally tough team. But Colorado, with a healthy Cale Makar, they could easily go back to the Cup final.
Yeah, give me a rundown on Vegas. I know they picked up Jack Eichel, but they've got Mark Stone. They've got some good goal scorers. They made a Cup final run a couple of years ago. How is this Vegas team looking?
They are a mentally tough team. You know, I talk about Edmonton. And Edmonton down the stretch was 9-0-1 in our last 10, played great. And yet they couldn't win the division because Vegas refused to lose. This is a mentally tough team. They're well coached by Bruce Cassidy. You know, Tony, usually when you have five goalies in a season playing for your team, you're usually a last-place team, not a first-place team. This team finds ways to win, and they don't have that. Like, Jack Eichel's a great player. Is he a superstar like Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon? He isn't. Didn't have a 30-goal score on this team. They did it by committee. They're deep. They have a big physical defense. And they're finding goaltending when they need to from Lauren Brossoit. So, again, this team, could they emerge and go back to a cup final for the second time in 6 years? They could. I think more because of their approach to the game. They just refuse to lose, and they have a big, physical, tough defense.
Can you ride a player, a star player that's not a goalie to a cup championship? Or do you have – is it the goalie that's significantly most important?
Up until last season, Tony, I would have said yeah. But Colorado won with Darcy Kemper. And he was good in a couple games, helped them win a couple of games in the final against Tampa. And then they let him walk the free agency and go to Washington. So I would say no. And here's the thing, Tony. This season, I looked at the goaltenders who started in game one. There's 16 teams. 11 of the 16 teams have a goaltender with less than 10 games of Stanley Cup experience. So I don't think so. Like, could Georgiev and Colorado win? Yeah. Georgiev's played two postseason games. Linus Ullmark. As great as the Bruins are, Linus Ullmark, up until last night, played three playoff games. So I don't think you need that Vasilevskiy-ish Shesterkin to win at this point in time if your team is deep and talented enough. And I just think there's more scoring in this in hockey right now. So I don't think you need that superstar goalie to win. You need superstar players, but if you have a good enough goalie, I think you can get by and win a championship. Look what Colorado did last season.
All right, give me the rundown of the two teams you saw last night, Edmonton, and we know about Connor McDavid and the L.A. Kings.
Well, the LA Kings, look, at 3-1, Leon Draisaitl, he had a fantastic game. I thought the game was over. But the Kings just, they are not intimidated by Edmonton. Since last season in the playoffs, they played 12 times, including the regular season. They've split six games. So this is going to be a deep series. They have an advantage in the middle with Andre Kopitar, who had 4 points last, and Phil Deneau. And they're getting really good goaltending. You talk about goaltending. Jonas Kopitar in the overtime was fantastic. I think this is a long, deep series. These teams do not like each other. And, you know, it's funny. You thought, if I told you last night that one team would have two power play goals and won the game, you would have told me Edmonton because they had the best power play in the league.
Sure.
Guess what? It was the Kings. And it just goes to show, you can't, in a playoff game, Tony, go in the box six times. That's what Edmonton did, and it wound up costing them a game. But I think this is a long, contentious series, probably along the lines of what we saw last season with Edmonton winning in seven. But again, this is two teams that are very familiar with each other, and because of that, in the playoffs, they really don't like each other.
All right, I want to ask you this real quick. I got a minute left, but Seattle Kraken, what does the NHL allow? Because we saw this with Vegas a couple years ago. You get an expansion team, and then somehow you are given enough talent to make it to the playoffs, and not only make it to the playoffs, it'll be a very good team. This is a 100-point team, Seattle.
Well, Tony, if you put up $1 billion to buy a team, you want some good players on it, right?
Right, yeah.
These billionaires are buying teams, so that's what happens. I think it's just there's a lot of power in this league, and there's a lot of good players, Tony. That's it. And if you get some good coaching in there, and you get guys who have chip on their – that's just the other thing, like Vegas. They have a chip on their shoulders because these were unwanted players. Like
right.
So, they had issues coming out of COVID last season and stuff like that. But they're a well-coached team that bought into a system that Dave Haxtell put in. That's why you see Seattle in the playoffs, because you put enough of good players together, you can win in this league.
Oh, Dennis, great stuff, man. An encyclopedia knowledge of the NHL playoffs, my friend. Thank you so much. We got to hook up with you again as this progresses. Thanks a lot, my man.
Anytime, Tony D. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
You got it. Dennis Bernstein, fourth period on the NHL playoffs, man. If you were taking notes, I'm sure you filled about 3 or 4 pages of all that information. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, a lot to dissect from Dennis Bernstein. We got a lot. There's, yeah, the Bruins are the best team in the regular season by a mile, but like he said, you win the President's Cup, the most points, that doesn't automatically mean you win the championship.
And we've seen that countless times
all the time,
in all sports.
Yep. So a lot of, and look, the Bruins are deep. They got good goaltending. They got two goaltenders that can start either one. So if one has a bad night, a good one is going in the net. But like Vegas is a good team. The Kings are really good. The Devils have got Jack Hughes is a good young player. So there's a lot to like about some of the other teams. But I still think it's Bruins. The Boston Marathon was ran yesterday. Evan Shebet from Kenya. 2 hours, 5 minutes, and 54 seconds to run 26.2 miles.
You sound surprised, Tony. I mean, I do that in my sleep.
2 hours. And then the second place person, Gabriel Gué, was 10 seconds behind him.
Yeah, that's...
Like, it's crazy.
I know we were talking about it off air yesterday, or maybe we mentioned it towards the tail end of the show. That's a sub-5-minute mile.
Exactly.
And the only thing that goes through my mind when thinking about that is, as you get into the 20s, you have to be slowing down a little bit.
It's at some point, right? You got to be like, oh, I can't be doing this.
So just playing like the numbers game, I mean, I'm no mathematician, but that means like early on he's doing sub-4-minute miles.
I know. That's nuts to
to
me. The women's Helen Obiri, 2 hours, 21 minutes, 38 seconds. So 2 hours, 20 minutes. She walking 2 hours and 21 minutes.
Terrible.
Oh, come on. That's amazingly fast for her. That's for a women's division. That's incredible.
Where would you be 2 hours, 20 minutes in?
Oh, I wouldn't be past mile 9. 10. No. How far could I crawl? That's basically, like, by the time I got to mile 5, I'd probably be in tears, crying. You know where I would be 2 hours later at the finish line because somebody drove me there and I quit.
What was her name? Rosie what?
Yeah, Rosie Ruiz.
Yeah.
Is that it? Yeah.
She was smart.
Smart. I seriously, 2 hours, 2 hours and 21 minutes for the women, 2 hours, 5 minutes for the men. That's insane. For 26 miles. I was trying to get my mind around that yesterday. Like, what can I put in context that is 26 miles from my house? And the only thing I could think about was one time when we first moved here to Spring Hill, Tennessee. We didn't have a movie theater in our town. And the nearest movie theater was 14 miles away because I ended up calculating it. I did a thing where I'm like, I want to, how far away is the only thing in this town was, we finally got one, but the only thing in this town was didn't have a movie theater. The closest is 14 miles. So I started thinking like running there and almost back to my house is 26 miles. And I'm thinking that's impossible. For somebody to run that in 2 hours, that's remarkable. Go to Google Earth and just take a thing of 26 miles and imagine running that. It's insane. 2 hours and 5 minutes. That's awesome. That is awesome. Is anyone ever going to break 2 hours? Or have we reached the pinnacle of human achievement?
I think we're getting closer.
I think
about it. I mean, the times keep getting smaller and smaller. 2:05, Tony. I mean,
do you need like the wind? Do you need like the perfect conditions? Like weather has to be like at the perfect temperature, like for every little scientific detail to work in your favor so you can run 26.2 miles or 26.2 miles and get there in less than 2 hours. I mean, like what was the times of the first marathon who ran it, right? Who ran the first marathon?
Way back in Greek time?
Yeah. Wasn't that somebody ran from Marathon to Athens, and that's why they call it? Didn't he die? That was kind of the story to tell the king, and then he died? How long did it take him to run it?
I'm looking it up. It's going to take me 2 hours just to figure out how to pronounce his name.
Yeah.
Pheidippides?
Oh, okay.
Pheidippides,
and he died.
He ran from the battle site Marathon to the Acropolis in Athens.
26 miles, and then he passed out, and then he delivered the news and died. So basically, from the very beginning, it was Mother Nature saying, you're not allowed to do this, human body. You're not allowed to run 26
miles. I think he ran
miles.
26.3 miles, and they shortened it to 26.2.
And they just said, yep. No, this will kill you if you do it. If you do it, you die. That's basically how the human body works.
The only difference is that he ran 150 miles in 2 days.
Well, good. Bless him. So that's why he died?
Probably.
That's
I would,
probably
too.
That's probably why he died. Boston Marathon. God bless him.
They ran 150 miles, then collapsed and died.
Well, 2 hours, 5 minutes, 54 seconds. That is the, that's, I don't know if that's a record. I don't know if that, that what that is. But anyway, that is the Boston Marathon time from yesterday. That's great. I like, the marathons are neat. They're really, really neat. Like the New York City Marathon is awesome. Like just, I love that it's always held in the fall. It's got that fall feel. And it, they're coming off the Verrazano Bridge mm-hmm. from Staten Island into Brooklyn. And then they run and they go through all the boroughs of New York City. They run through all of them and then finish. And the Boston Marathon is always held in April and it's always spring. It's kind of like these seasons, right? Like that kind of have these unique seasons. Like for people in Boston, it's a tough winter. It's a hard winter. Red Sox are playing in the Boston Marathon. Spring is here. There's no going back. It's just going to get warmer from this point forward.
Since you asked, I looked it up.
Yep.
And so I do think at some point in time, we're going to get below 2 hours.
Right. Has anyone done it?
Oh, I don't know if anyone's done it, but the first marathon at the Olympics in 1896, so that's a long time ago.
Right.
2 hours, 58 minutes, and 50 seconds.
So, wow, that's – that. Okay, so that's only – I would have thought it was 3-plus, like the first one.
Yeah, 1896.
So I would have gone down the road of like, oh, yeah, well, the first marathon's probably – it's kind of like – you know, like in the old days when they would be like, well, the pitcher's fastball was 72 miles an hour. And you're like, oh.
But apparently, it looks
still
like
2 hours plus is awesome.
It looks like the distance was 24.85 miles.
Wow. You know, if you go to one of these races and it's not exactly the distance, people get mad. There'll be a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Against you. If you run a 5K and they're like, hey, come down for the Wacky Gym 5K. Woohoo, sign up today. And then you get there and you run and you get a time and they find out later that it was actually, you know, 4.8 kilometers instead of 5 kilometers. You can be, people take that seriously. Those times are real. They got to log those things and they are real. Philip on Twitter, I barely want to drive 150 miles in one day, let alone run it. Yeah, I know, right?
But Phil, to make it easier, it was over 2 days.
You know how many times, though, I've gone out for a walk where I put my headphones in and I'm like, man, I got this 2 hour podcast or I'm going to walk. And then by like 10 minutes in, I'm bored.
Yeah.
10 minutes in, I'm like, can I be done? Can I just go in now? I'm like, no, man, I'm going to walk 5 miles. And I get out there and after like 15 minutes, I'm like, this is boring. I don't want to do this anymore. Even if I'm entertained, I'm bored. I can only imagine. Do these guys even listen to music? Do they listen to anything? I never see any ear pods or anything. They just seem to be in their own mental zone running 26.2 miles.
You're actually right about that. You never see them.
No. Like back when I was a kid, I never saw them with a Walkman. That's too much weight.
Yeah. That would make sense to me. But now, you know, you could be wearing, they all are wearing watches. Because they're cut their own time. You could have your AirPods plugged into your watch.
You can have your watch delivering the music tunes or whatever.
Hmm. Interesting.
Can you imagine? All right, you're settling into a movie. The movie is 2 hours and 10 minutes. You start the movie, somebody starts running. By the time the movie is over, he's run 26.2 miles. And just ate up mile after mile after mile. Man, I'm telling you. You think at my age I wouldn't be blown away by anything. I haven't seen it all. I mean, my God, I went to the Boston Marathon. But you put it in these contexts, and it makes me go, oh, the human athletic accomplishments, still amazing. Marathon running. How silly is that? Who has to run a marathon? Use a bike. Use one of those electric scooters to run a marathon. I would love to be able to run a marathon sometime in my life just to say I did it. I feel like that's a cool thing to tell people at parties. I'm never going to be able to run a marathon ever. And there's no training that'll allow me to run a marathon. I am just not built to be done with 26 miles in a reasonable amount of time. Even if I went and practiced, ran every day, I think there's a threshold where I just go, nope, that's it, you're done, no.
So apparently, there has been a sub-2-hour marathon.
Really?
Eliud Kipchoge or whatever. But I don't know how 100% official it is.
I got you. Okay, it's one of those. I got you. Yeah. We'll see you tomorrow. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Lombardi Line is coming up next.